Torah tells us, Lo yavo mamzer b'kal Hashem, a mamzer is not allowed to marry freely within the Jewish people. A mamzer can marry a mamzeres, a mamzer can marry a gioris, but a mamzer can't marry freely other born Jews. Who's considered a mamzer? So this we know is a machlokes tanoim. A few opinions in tanoim. We paskin that a mamzer is a product of a relationship that has no tfisas kedushin, namely a relationship that involves chayve krisos or chayve nisus bezdin. Most typically, the common case is if you have a man who cohabits with an eishes ish. Every now and then you have in the halachic literature a case of an eishes achshila b'maka mitzvah, where the husband is deceased and he has children, so there's no yibam situation, and then his wife marries the brother. If you have a relationship between a guy and a Jewish woman, that does not create mamzeres. Probably the strongest argument against having a civil marriage or for having civil marriage in Eretz Yisrael is the fact that you have these kinds of situations where if you're living in Israel, you have no choice but to get married halachically, and if you stay in Israel, you have no choice but to get halachic get. If you leave the country and you're not religiously affiliated, then you're not necessarily going to get a get, and that has consequences potentially of creating mamzeres, which unfortunately we have to deal with every now and then. Last week we discussed the status of civil marriages in halacha, so that's a big component in this conversation, as we'll see. But what's more kal about evaluating the status of someone as a mamzer, as opposed to an eishes ish, is that the Gemara tells us that mamzer vada yaser tov lo mamzer safek, that the iser mamzeres doesn't apply if someone is a if there's a safek mamzeres. So Rav Schachter usually quotes in this context Rabbi Chanan, printed in the Kovetz Aris Siman Ayin Ches. So the way Rabbi Chanan explains the notion of Safek Mamzer is that just like the Ran at the end of the first parak in Kedushin says that Safek Orla B'chutz La'aretz means that you don't have to do investigation. If you know that something, you don't know whether something's Orla, you don't have to do so much research. So when it comes to Mamzeris also, if the facts present themselves, you have no choice but to deal with them. But you don't have to go searching for the facts. So sometimes if, in theory, the way Rav Schachter likes to quote from this Rabbi Chanan is that I can know for a fact that this person is a mamzer, but I have no obligation to inform him of that reality, and if he marries someone, even though I know that he's marrying the Isser, there's no problem with that. It's a bad idea, because maybe he'll find out at some point that he is a mamzer, and that could have much worse consequences, but in theory, the notion of Safek mamzer mutter gives us sometimes grounds to be a little bit more makel in evaluating these situations. Probably the most famous case of mamzeres or mamzeres situation in the last 50 years was the case that came to a head in the early 1970s in Eretz Yisrael, the Langer case. The basic storyline there was that there was a fellow by the name of Barakovsky, I think, who was born in Poland before the war. He was born as a non-Jew. He married a Jewish woman, and the reports were that he converted to Judaism in the early 1930s in Poland. Then they moved to Eretz Yisrael before the war. They separated. His wife remarried someone by the name of Langer. She didn't disclose to the Bezdin or to the Rabbanut that she had been previously married to the first guy. So the Rabbanut married her thinking that she was a single woman. And then sometime subsequent to that, the first husband wanted to get remarried, so he petitioned for a get. And in the course of that diyun, they discovered that Mrs. Langer had two children from the second marriage already, and they issued a psak that these two children are mamzerim. They're not allowed to marry other Jews. So that was entered into the official registry of the Rabbanut. And then a few years later, they served in the army, these kids, and then they raised the issue again, and it went up to the Beit Din HaGadol. There was a tik and a diyun in the Beit Din HaGadol, the Court of Appeals, which at the time, the three dayanim were Rav Yashiv, Shaul Yisraeli, and Rav Avadia, all-star lineup. And they paskin that the original ruling of the original Beit Din stood, and these two children are asurim lava b'kal. This had major political ramifications because these were connected people, they're in the army, and there's a lot of tumulting. So Rabbi Goren, who at the time was the chief rabbi of Tzahal and the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, who was about to become the chief rabbi of the state of Israel, issued a psak, which originally was a secret military document that wasn't publicized, and then they petitioned the Bagat to release it, then he released it. So he issued a psak that it was matir, these children from the stigma of Manzeres, And he had 9 other rabbis who signed along with him, and the rabbis were anonymous, their names were not released, Adayam said the names weren't released, haven't been released, and this created a whole major taram in the halachic world. Leaving aside the politics, what was the issue at hand? What were the facts, and what was the halachic analysis? So the facts are not something that often come up in these discussions, but the issue, particular issue at hand was, number one, was the geiris of this first husband a valid geiris? Everyone would agree that if there was a determination that there was no geiris, that the person is a non-Jew, then there's nothing to talk about, there's no chashash mamzeris. The issue here was that all indications were that this person identified as being Jewish. It is very likely that it was a proper halacha geiris, and he was connected within the Jewish community in Israel, even though he had originally come from the church. That was part of the discussion here, where procedurally, a lot of the opposition to Rabbi Goren Tzak was that he called certain testimony that was questionable, and some of the facts he presented was questionable, and the process was questionable because the Beit Din HaGadol had jurisdiction, and he didn't send it back to the original Beis Din, he made his own Beis Din, made his own Tzak on his own. So, whatever the politics of the case were, and whatever the procedural issues were, the actual bottom line halachic issue is relevant. If you have a situation where you make a determination that there was supposedly a geiris and the geiris was absolutely invalid, so then a person's not Jewish, it doesn't create mamzeris. I think we spoke about one of the summer shiurim on Shabbos a couple years ago a little bit, what does it take to invalidate a geiris post facto, but that's not our conversation for this evening. The easier cases to deal with that come to a Beis Din involve the situations where you can come to a determination that the first marriage was not a lawfully valid marriage, which was our topic of last week. Either that it was a civil marriage, or it was a marriage performed by non-Orthodox clergymen, not in the presence of kosher edim. So in a situation like that, so even though l'chachila we would require a get, where a get wasn't given, it would not create the mamzeris for the product of a second marriage. So those are the easy cases. The more difficult cases are cases where it was a proper halachic marriage. So is there any other way to go, any other way to solve the potential problem of mamzeris under such circumstances? So as we alluded to earlier, there's this notion that suffik mamzer is mutter. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, it's printed over here in source number 6, Evan Ezra Chelek Gimel Semen Hay, where Rav Moshe points out that when it comes to analyzing these issues, if we have no objective information, the woman herself doesn't necessarily have nemunas to create a situation of mamzeris tapasul. So if you look at the earlier sources, Shulchan Aruch, in Simen Dalet Se'if Tesvav, and the Rambam there, Yisrael Be'er Tesvav Yutes, generally speaking, a father has the right to say, there's a notion of Ne'amanus Yakir, that a father has the right to identify who his son is, L'inyan Pishnayim. So he can say, this is my son, he's a Bechor, and therefore he's entitled to Pishnayim. And a father also has Ne'amanus to say that Zebni Mamzerhu. Part of that same Ne'amanus of Yakir is he can identify his son as being a Mamzer. Mother has no such Ne'amanus. A mother doesn't, normally speaking, have the amanus to say, if we have the presumption otherwise, a mother doesn't have the amanus to say that my kid is a mamzer or a mamzer. So Moshe here is talking about a situation where the representation of a mother was that she had married someone in Poland before the war, and then she took the next boat to South America, and she never saw this husband again. She married someone else without procuring a get from the first husband. So here, the only information we have about there being a first marriage is from the mother. There's no independent documentation. There's no independent edus. Maybe there was chuppah b'kiddushin. Maybe there wasn't chuppah b'kiddushin. Maybe the marriage never took place. Maybe it was just for what we would call green card purposes. She wanted to get out of Europe and do this guy a favor and get him out also. Whatever the situation may have been, absent any objective documentation or evidence of the fact that there was an original marriage, there's what to be makel about where there's no possibility of getting more information, where this happened so many years ago and there's no documentation, no paper trail, not to have to be concerned. We had a case recently in the Beis Din, a few generations removed, where there was a mother, grandmother, in Morocco in the 1920s and the 1930s, and there is some notion in the family that she was married previously to her previous husband. Maybe there was chuppah v'kiddushin, maybe there wasn't chuppah v'kiddushin, maybe there was a get. No one's around anymore. There are no records in the community. there's no possibility of getting any further information, and we're not worried that it's going to come to the fore in the future. So, Savig Mamzer Mutter, we don't have any information. This Juvar Moshe, there's what to be make of that. We had one situation we dealt with, the case where there was a first marriage that was performed, presumably halachically, by a proper Orthodox rabbi with proper Eidei Kiddushin, but these were irreligious people, and then the marriage ended without a get, and then she remarried a second husband, and then they became Baalei Tshuva years later. So in some of the conversations, they had two children. It turns out that one of the children, they were having difficulty conceiving, so one of the children was born through IVF, through artificial reproductive methods. So Moshe has a tshuva in Evan Ezra Chelek Aleph Siman Yud, where Moshe argues that in order to create mamzeres, you need to have a maisabiyah. So this Abra Bambati doesn't create mamzeres. As opposed to Yichus, where Yichus has to do with the person could be misyaches after the source of the zera, even if there wasn't a maisabiyah. When it comes to defining mamzeres, mamzeres is only created through a maisabiyah. Whether mamzeres could be perpetuated without a maisabiyah is a separate conversation, maybe yes, but in terms of creating mamzeres, you need a maisabiyah, and therefore a child conceived under artificially productive circumstances would not have the stigma of mamzeres. Okay, so as we said earlier, father has nemanus yaker, father's belief to say zebani mamzer, mother. So when we deal with these situations, we try to keep the father out of the picture. Don't talk to him, he could say something that's going to be damaging. They talk to the mother. So the mother, strictly speaking, has no nemanus to pasul. And we say in Shulchan Aruch, if you take a look at source 4, over here, Evan Ezer, Simon Dalit, Siv Kavtes, based on the Rambam, Yisrei Biyates Vavalach Yates, that it's in the middle of the paragraph number 4, V'nhi Omeres Me'ovek Hachavim O'me'evinis Sabarti Havlag Kasher, that if a woman says that the father of this child is a goy, so then we believe her to say that the Vlad is Kasher. So this is talking about where the woman volunteers that the father was a guy. What if the woman says nothing? What if she doesn't volunteer anything? Or do we have the right to be told that maybe the father is a guy? Especially in a situation where the rov are goyim. We live in Chutz Laaretz, most people are goyim. So do we have the right to be told on the rov even if she didn't say anything? So if you look in the Beis Shmuel here, Siv Katan and Beis Shmuel thinks this is a machlokes rishonim, machlokes between the Tor and the Rush, whether you have the right to be told about akum even if the woman says nothing. Some achronim suggest maybe there really isn't a machlokas. Maybe Evan agrees that we have the right to be tola begoy even if the woman says nothing. If you look in the next page of the source sheet, there's the Shuvan Lechelkas Yaakov, Evan Ezra Siman Yud Aleph Os Gimel, where he suggests that there really is no machlokas for another reason, that the different Rishonim are talking about different societal situations. When the Jews lived in the ghetto in Europe, where there's no interaction with the guy, you haven't kept to themselves. So that's totally unrealistic to be told of the guy because no one had that kind of an interaction where that was a plausible possibility. But when the ghetto walls fell and when Jews live in a society where there are no inhibitions and we live among goyim and people interact freely, so then there's a much more legitimate argument that you could be told of Akum. There's in the next citation here, Rav Yashiv in Shuvah Chelak Aleph Simon Kuf Mem Aleph quotes along these lines from the Chasam Sofer Evan Ezer Simon Tess, that what does it mean that you can't be Tal of a guy? You can't be Tal of a guy if you live in a society in a situation where it would be disgraceful for anyone to cohabit with a guy. But if you live in a society where these things happen all the time, so then there's nothing wrong being Tal of because that's a legitimate. Legitimate construction of what well may have happened. Especially in a situation where you have Rov Akum, where you have the Gemara in Ksubas, Daf Yud Gimel talks about Trei Ruvi, Rov Yer, Rov Sia, the majority of the people who are permanent residents of the city are Goyim, the majority of the people who travel through the city are Goyim. So then there may be what to rely on, even if the woman doesn't volunteer that the father is a Goy, to be Tola that the father is a Goy. Now, what about in a situation where you even apply this, where we know that this woman has an exclusive relationship with another Jew? So if you look in source 10 over here, Sif Kavav in Simen Dalid, There's a letter missing there. It should say Pinuya Shinis Abra Vialda. If you have a single woman who becomes pregnant, she gives birth. If we can't talk to her or she can't communicate, and even if she says that the father is someone who we know to be a mamzer, it's only a safek. Even if that guy represents that he was the father, we have the right to say that even though we have reason to suspect that she had a relationship with one person, but maybe she had a relationship with other people also, maybe she had a relationship with other goyim, and you have the right to assume that the father is a guy. Now this is based on a complicated sugya in Yevamos Daf Samach Tes. There's Machlokas Amaronim, Machlokas Rishonim, Machlokas Achronim, how we paskin. Here the Gemara is talking about a case of an Arusa Sheibra. You have a woman who's betrothed, Erusin, not yet Nisuin, and she becomes pregnant. So do we have the right to assume that the Baal, that the father is the Arus, or maybe the father is someone else? So in that situation, to say that the father is the Arus would be a kula, would be, the kid's fine. As opposed to saying it's someone else, maybe the kid's a mamzer. Here, it's the opposite case, to say that the father is the person who we think is the father, that could create mamzerus, that would be luchumra. So there the Gemara has the terms, daima minei mealma, that we know the women to have a relationship with this person, and she has relationships with other men also, and daima minei velo mealma, that she has a relationship with this person, but it's an exclusive relationship, she doesn't have relationships with other men. So do you have the right to assume that even by daima minei velo mealma, that even if we know she only has a relationship with this man and no one else, do we still have the right to assume that you could be tole begoy? So the Chalkos Mechokek here thinks Bedasa Rambam that you only have the right to be tole in this person. If it's daima minei ulmealma, if you have, we know that she has a relationship with this person and other men as well, so then you have the right to be tole with the other people who may be goyim. But if you know that she only has an exclusive relationship with this person, so then you don't have the right to be tole in anyone else. But even in that case, Rav Avadya, who's a big makel on these things, Shuvas Yabi Omer, Chelek Yud, Evan Ezer, Simin Vav, so Rav Avadya has the following argument, that even in the case of Daima Minei, Velo Me'alma, we say, Mida Afkar Anafsha, B'Isser Eishas Ishali Nasi Ezrachis, Ish Zar Lo Kabal Saget, if she is... so promiscuous as to violate the Isser Eishes Ish, to marry civilly to someone else without receiving a gift from the first husband, so you have the right to assume that she was mafkir herself to goy also, especially in a community where there are rove goyim. So Ravadya's matter, even in a situation where she's civilly married to the second husband, so you'd assume that there's nowhere else to be tole on it because this is the one guy that she's involved with, you still have the right to be tole binachri. Rav Yashiv in Kovas Chuvas Chelak Aleph Simen Kuf Mem Aleph Kovas Chuvas Chivas Tzion Simen Samech Zayin, that in a case where we know that this woman had a relationship with one specific person, so he writes Benidon Da Nira Shaisam Yuchedus Lav Isaac Shirubo Kekelev, they just follow each other, Shenasa Lebasof, even though they weren't married at the time that she became pregnant and then got married. So then you have to assume that that's the father because that's the one person she had an exclusive relationship with, and then you have to assume that the kid is a mamzer. Rav Yashiv thinks, not necessarily, you could distinguish between where they were married at the time and where they subsequently got married. Even though they were in a relationship at the time that she became pregnant, if they weren't married, so maybe she had a relationship with other men also. If she's already civilly married, so that's a certain level of exclusivity. So then you don't have the right to be tole b'akka. But if they weren't civilly married, even though they were engaged in some relationship, maybe there you still have the right to be tole b'akka. Rav Asher Weiss is noted to the Rav Yashiv approach also, that as long as they're not civilly married, maybe you have the right to be mekel and be tole b'akka. Minchas Asher Simen Ayin Dalet, Chelek Aleph Simen Ayin Dalet. But where there was a civil marriage, where she's already civilly married to husband number two, so then most achronim would say, you don't have the right to say you can be tole b'goy because she has an exclusive relationship with her current husband to whom she's civilly married. Nevertheless, Rav Avadya is makel even here. He quotes a position of the Baal HaFla. The Baal HaFla wrote a sefer in Chumash called Panim Yafos. Rav Shechter likes to point out that it was edited by, the HaFla was a Hasidic Rebbe, was the Rebbe of Frankfurt, was edited by his son, who was not such a Hasidic Rebbe. So whenever he quotes the Maggid, they excise any reference to the Maggid, but sometimes he quotes the Maggid Mishnah, they took that out also. because when they're editing, they didn't understand the difference. So the Hafla in the Panim Yafos has this Kiddush. Now, what does it mean, Rov Bilas Eitzel Labal? So if you look in the earlier sources, we quoted from Shulchan Aruch in the top of the first page, that generally speaking, we say there's a chazaka, Rov Bilas Eitzel Labal. If a woman is married to a man, so unless there's any contrary information, you have the right to assume that the father is the husband is the father. So usually we're inclined to assume that Rov Bilas Eitzel Labal means that that's a mathematical rov, that statistically speaking, most times a woman has relations with a man, it's with her husband. So the Baal HaFla says that's not exactly the point. It's a halachic construct, even not dependent on a mathematical rov. So rov bilas eitzel baal means rov bilas eitzel the halachic baal. So even if she's now civilly married to someone else, she's not no longer has a relation with the first husband. Halachically, she's still married to the first husband. If she's halachically still married to the first husband, so then we have the right to assume that she wouldn't want to violate the Isser Eishes Ish. So it's more likely, halachically speaking, that she had relationships with the first husband, and the first husband is the halachic father of the child, even if that flies in the face of what we would consider objective reality. So this is a broader question. Do we rely on halachic principles sometimes, even in the face of what would seem to be the objective factual reality? So we had, knowing that Rav Avadia, who had the shoulders to make such psakim, had certain kulas in these areas that other poskim didn't have. We had a couple of complicated situations along these lines a few years ago where there was no one here who was comfortable giving a psak l'kula. But we sent the shaylas there as well. We sent them to my friend Rav Avadia's grandson, Rabbi Avadia Yosef Toledano, who wrote a nice tshuvas, printed in his tshuvas sefer, I forget what it's called. And then he gave it to his grandfather, who wrote his haskama. So there are two cases. There's one case of Baal Tshuva family where the son was learning in yeshiva in New York. He was about to get engaged. He had no idea that there was any issue. And it was really a very difficult case, but Rav Avadia came up with the kula on the basis of some of these things we just discussed. And we forwarded that to the family, and then the son was able to get happily married. And I assume he's still hopefully happily married and has no idea that this issue ever came up. We just conclude with another interesting marmakam on this topic. There's a famous tshuva of the Marasham. The last marmakam here in the packet. The Marasham has the following suggestion, which he admits is lahalacha v'lola maisa, and he was only asked the shayla after the fact, so it wasn't really relevant in his situation anyway. But he suggests, and maybe one could argue theoretically, the following suggestion. You have a situation where you have an eishes ish zinsa, and she didn't procure a get from her first husband. They have a child from the second, from the Baal Sheni. But now, the husband's willing to cooperate, the first husband, to give her a get. So he makes the following observation. Those of you learning in the Gittin Kolel here, I think recently started the Lamed. So the Gemara in the beginning of the fourth parak, the Mishnah tells us Lamed Beis, that originally speaking, the din was that the husband could be Mevatel L'Shaliach Shelo B'fnei HaShaliach. That you could appoint a shliach l'alacha to deliver the get, and then you could go and be mevatel in front of another bezdin, and the shliach l'alacha would not know any better. He'd go deliver the get, the woman would remarry, the kids would be mamzerim, and no one would ever know that, or maybe at some point they'd find out, and that would be worse, that he was mevatel the shliach b'fnei bezdin, shelo b'fnei ha-shliach, and the shliach had no right to deliver the get. So then the Gemara says, machlokes, do we say, v'la mevutel, do we say that after the kanus gamliel, that you're not allowed to do it. So let's say you did it anyway against Takanas or Gamliel. So Machlokas in the Gemara, do we say Bitla Mevutal, that even though you went against the Takanas or Gamliel, the Bitl still works and the Shlichus is nullified, or do we say no, that after the Takanas or Gamliel, even if you tried to be Mevatu Shalob Ufnei HaShaliach, it doesn't work. So we paskin that it doesn't work. And then the Gemara asks, one second, Mina Torah, you're Mevatu the Shaliach, and the get is no get. So Mina Torah, if we say that the bitlo minotaur should have been that you're mevatel the shaliach, second, right, minotaur you mevatel the shaliach, and then he has no right to deliver the get, and she's still married. And midrabbanan, we say that she's no longer married. So we have the right to do that. Minatara, she's married. So Gemara says, Afkin rabbanan the kedusha mina. I called the mekadesh adaita. The rabbanan mekadesh, that whoever gets married does so with the intention that it's based on what the rabbis say. And Afkin rabbanan the kedusha mina. So then the rabbis have the right to be mafkia the kedushin. So then it's as if they're never married. So tells us Akasha, it's as if they were never married. So then you have a solution to a person could engage in an illicit relationship, then they'll do this trick and be mevatel or shaliach shalobafanav, and then it'll be as if they're never married. You could get away with having an illicit relationship. And tells us two things: either in a chanami, or we wouldn't allow that to happen under those circumstances. So according to the Inachanami Teretz, the Mirsham makes the following suggestion. In this case, where you have a potential mamzeri situation, maybe you could have the first husband now appoint a shaliach lalacha to deliver the get, and then mibavatil the shaliach shalo b'fanav, and then it'll be as if they're never married, if they're never married to begin with, so there's no mamzeris. So Mirsham makes this suggestion, lalacha lalamaisa, maybe it's something to consider. So the Marsham itself is very tentative about this. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva, I think it's reprinted in Minchas in Chelek Aleph, maybe Siman Ayin Aleph, I don't remember, in which he has a number of reasons that this isn't so pashut. Number one, Machlokas the Gemara, we're talking about a Bezin of two, Bezin of three, so anyway you slice it, it may not work. According to half of the Rishonim, even if we would invoke Afginu, it wouldn't solve the Mamzeris problem, and it doesn't necessarily mean that everything, all aspects are nullified in Mafreya. So a number of reasons that the implementation of this is potentially problematic. Nevertheless, Rabbi Gamliel, who's the head of the Agaf Agunot in the Batei Din Rabbanim, once told me that with under instructions from Rabbi Baron, one of the Dayanim of the Beit Din Agadol, I think Zalman Nechemya may have been involved, they once did something like this, not exactly Bitul Shalech Shalab Afanav, but a get Safik Karvlo, Sidei Rishis Arabim, similar kind of situation we might invoke Afginu to solve this problem. It's not something we would ever do, but apparently it may have been done at some point by someone. So these are some of the situations we have to deal with on the Mamzeris front, and some of the potential solutions.